Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Two games, more injuries, and the ever so faint sound of Samba appearing over the horizon. A week is a long time in the world of Norwich City. Welcome back to the Pinkin.com podcast in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, and joining us to dissect the various strands of Canaries discourse are Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman. Gents, we've got lots to get through in a relatively short period of time. Norwich have played two games. As I said at the top of the show, there's plenty more injury news to delve into. And of course, we've got the small matter of an incoming signing to discuss as well. So, Paddy, we were obviously at the walks last night. So that seems like the place to start, really, in terms of Norwich City. An unbeaten start to pre-season. Don't know about you. I kind of left the walks feeling a little bit conflicted by what I'd seen. And of course, we have to caveat this whole conversation and everything that we're about to dissect that game with the fact that it's pre-season against a kind of non-league side. But I don't know. Maybe this is the question, really. Am I a little bit, I don't know, is it a bit much to be asking to want to see a little bit more from Norwich City at this stage of the piece?
Yes and no. Yeah, I mean, that did feel an interminably long second half, which is never a good sign when you're willing the end of the game because there's not a huge amount happening. But I thought it was, I've seen a tweet this morning, actually, and pointing out that the 2010 summer, they did not go unbeaten. They won all their games. And then who do they play on the opening day of the season? Colchester United, League One, and they get absolutely battered. And we know what happened thereafter, of course, and it turned out to be a positive campaign. But for that reason, and I've just picked out that one example, but I'm sure there's many recent summers where Norwich have purely judged through results and maybe even performances looked like, yeah, everything is in full working order, really confident, optimism abounds, and then the season starts when it really matters and they fall short. So, and I'm sure that the opposite is true. And maybe at this stage, you could contest it, but maybe there's somewhere in between. I think there's been one or two positive elements, but it's worth pointing out. We've seen a game against Dereham and a game against Kings Lynn, two essential fitness exercises. And then, we didn't see it because it wasn't broadcast, but a workout against a Bundesliga 2 opponent. And I don't think, as a barometer of where Norwich are this season for the head, I would place any store but what we've seen so far. I think from now, Dean Smith said it after the game, Tuesday night, now it does ramp up. You know, they go and play Marseille, Champions League outfit. Then they play Cambridge United, step back, you could say, in terms of level of opponent. But then they finish with Celtic, massive, massive club, and Hibs, another Scottish Premiership club. So for me, in terms of applying the performance parameters to pre-season and judging, that's to come. I think that starts now with Marseille. I think the last three games culminating with Kings Lynn on Tuesday night. And we saw it in Dean Smith's approach. It was 60 minutes for the starting group and then it was changes abounded. I think they made 8 in one hit. So if you're looking for rhythm and patterns of play, it's just not going to happen when you're making 8 changes. It's like, 8 buses coming along or whatever that saying is. So if that's how you feel, Connor, then fair enough. But for me, I place no store by what I've seen so far in terms of, I can see the patterns of play. I can see the style of play. I can see what the setup's about. I can see the personnel within the system. And that looks really positive. For me, it's just you know, you look at a lot of the players who played last night, Timu Pukki, for example, he only came back into camp last Wednesday. So he's been back in pre-season less than a week. So to expect him, Rashica, Krul, Hanley, all the ones who came back late, Sanani, to suddenly start knocking it about like Brazil, to use a pertinent destination for what we might get into in a, later on in the pod, probably unrealistic. So, yeah, maybe that's a question I think we can only definitively answer maybe post-Hibs and before Cardiff, because by then, pre-season's done, we've seen all calibre of opponent and we've seen enough games for Dean Smith and those players to really look like a cohesive unit with and without the ball.
Yeah, and the answer to maybe the concerns, and it's concerns that I've seen other people express as well, and maybe it's off the back of partly what we saw last season as well, they will only be answered once we get to the end of pre-season or we start the championship season. So it's probably not anything that we can answer right now, but maybe for me, and you're right, there isn't perhaps an unrealism to expecting Norwich to be polished, and they're still very much a work in progress. But and this is where I'll bring you in on this, Sam. For me, I think I probably just wanted to see a little bit more of what the plan is, I think, at this stage. And maybe it is about fitness, and that's fine. And perhaps in the next four games, we will see a transformation in terms of the way that Norwich City operate. But for me, I was still watching it kind of thinking, I'm not really sure where the creativity in this team is. Similar issue to maybe what we discussed last year. And obviously, there's going to be incomings and stuff to address that. So again, probably a question that we can park and wait. But where do you kind of sit? I mean, pre-season's always quite futile anyway in terms of analysis and drawing hard and fast conclusions. But I don't know. It just feels to me like I probably wanted to see Norwich City perhaps a little bit further along in terms of Dean Smith's playing philosophy more than anything else.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it's a problem we've been talking about pretty much since the start of his reign, really. I said to you during the match yesterday that sometimes in pre-season you actually get more out of the sort of post-match interviews than you do from watching the games. And I think it was the same case yesterday in terms of Dean Smith assessing tactically the setup yesterday and how he wanted to do things, because he spoke about counter-attacking and wanting to do better at that. I can only remember one occasion yesterday when they really went for a proper counter-attack and they failed to execute it very well at all, really. Chris Osciolis didn't make quite an obvious run that would have opened up a lot of space for Max Ahrens, and then Tamer Pukki played a really quite poor pass in that direction when it felt like it could have been quite a simple way to get Norwich through on goal. And I also would question maybe how capable Norwich are going to be in the Championship at counter-attacking, given most teams are going to be willing to sit behind the ball and recognise that Norwich are probably going to be favourites for promotion to the Premier League. Where is the space going to be to go and counter-attack? And these are the questions that we want answered. We're not really, as you said, much closer to finding those answers. I mean, you know, as Paddy said, we do need to add those caveats as to the fact that it's King's Lynn and probably there aren't going to be any Championship games that look close to what we saw last night. But the lack of creativity really did worry me. I think the incoming signing of Gabriel Sara will probably ease some of those concerns among Norwich fans a little bit, at least until they've seen him play and had the opportunity to assess whether he's the answer to those problems. But when you don't look like you have the final pass against King's Lynn, I think that's worrying for me, because they had plenty of possession. They had plenty of opportunity to unpick the defence. And this isn't a top level defence. This is an assortment of National League North level defenders that are tasked with keeping a side out that have just been relegated from the Premier League. So it shouldn't be that difficult in theory to do that. Obviously they're still tuning up, and I'm sure Dean Smith would highlight that. And that probably in a couple of games they're going to look a little bit more like what he wants them to look like. But yeah, we've been asking these questions for a long time now. What does a Dean Smith Norwich City side look like? And I think it's a very strange position to be in, given that we've probably had the most easily identifiable Norwich City side in Daniel Farke's immediately before Dean Smith's. And maybe what we're seeing now is just the average Championship football team that does a little bit of everything. But it's hard for Norwich fans to accept, given how obvious and clear the identity was before. So it could be that this is what we see from Norwich now on. Maybe it's just an assortment of various styles and different players coming together to formulate just a sort of quite average bit of everything approach. But it would be nice to maybe see some of those aspects improved that Dean Smith talks about, like counter-attacking. If you're going to talk about it in a post-match interview, you probably want to see some more signs of quality in those areas during the match. And I don't think we really saw that. But, you know, as we said, and we'll continue to say throughout the pod, it is King's Lynn, and hopefully we'll get a better sense of that against the bigger sides.
Yeah, and I think at this stage, I want to make it clear, it's not us absolutely hammering them for no reason. I think they're kind of observations at this stage. Just kind of maybe, you know, when you're driving a car and a warning light comes on, perhaps, and you can ignore it for a little bit and wait and see if it gets better. I think that's kind of where I'm at with it at the moment, because there's potential that Norwich play Marseille on Saturday. And as Paddy said, they look like vintage Brazil on the basis of another week of training, and time will, of course, help them as we build up to the season. And of course, as Paddy also mentioned, they can also go on from here, win all their friendly matches 4-0, playing absolutely superbly, and still lose to Cardiff on the opening day of the season. Equally, they can lose all games 4-0 and beat Cardiff on the opening day of the season. So how much of it, I suppose, you want to read into pre-season and various levels of it is up to you. But that's kind of my thoughts on it. But to dissect the game in maybe more general terms, Pad, I mean, the last half an hour was very pre-season-y, as you mentioned. It was Norwich made 8 subs at once. King's Lynn were rolling on trialists. So I think we can kind of park that. But for the opening 20 minutes, and we could probably split this into two halves, the opening 20 minutes and what happened thereafter, King's Lynn started very brightly. Norwich were quite sluggish. I think that's probably fair to say. There's an element of Dean Smith probably wanting that, because he's spoken about wanting to see his team under stress, and there will have been double sessions, no doubt, in there, and they probably trained before this game as well. But actually, they begin to grow into it thereafter, and obviously, Timo Pukki opened his account for the campaign, and it was quite an interesting night for him. Obviously, he limped off injured in the second half. So how would you kind of assess the game, I suppose, as a test, as a run out, as a fitness builder? Obviously, Dean Smith watched the game from the stands as well. He kind of said after the game he doesn't really like to coach during pre-season matches. So again, linking back to sort of our previous debate, all of these things can probably be interlinked and create quite a hazy picture for maybe what the weeks ahead look like for Norwich City.
Yeah, and we will get into it very shortly, I'm sure. But another facet in play here is the injuries. And not even Hayden, because he's not had Hayden available. But clearly, if Hayden was available, we'd have seen him by now. But, you know, when you don't have, if I miss any of them out, I mean, you don't have Kieran Dowell, Piers Leesmaalu, Angus Gunn to a lesser extent, because Tim Krul's very capable and there's hardly a difference between them in terms of their impact in the side. But Sam Barham, another one. You know, it's very hard to have that cohesion in and around, as you rightly say. You know, they'll be doing some intensive training work. And you know, that has to be a factor ultimately in what was, I think it's safe to say, very disjointed, very bitty. There's no doubt King's Lynn started far better. They were aggressive, very committed across the middle of the park. Onel Hernandez came in for some treatment, Daniel Sonani as well. And it was really that first goal you talk about. Well, that was sourced in a pretty horrendous error from a King's Lynn player. So it wasn't that Norwich carved them open to, you know, acknowledge the points you boys were making about the lack of creativity. And even the second goal, you know, there was a turnover high up the pitch. You knew this squares it to Jolis, and it's in the back of the net. So more or less gifted Norwich's two goals on the night. And I felt it was kind of at the moment where that kind of early, because obviously, you know, we all know it's a very hot period at the minute in terms of the physical output required in these sort of conditions. And I thought when Kingsley started to dip in terms of their levels physically, that's when it became a little bit more routine and without Norwich really breaking them down, a pretty comfortable evening. I thought from that point onwards, and as we discussed, you know, when you make the levels, the volume of substitutions on both sides that you got in the second half, then as a meaningful contest, it's over, basically. So it was probably just that spell, 20 minutes or so, either half, that Norwich really looked in a degree of control. Thereafter, it was kind of just seeing out the game, getting minutes into a different set of players. But I would have thought Dean Smith watching wouldn't have been overly impressed with the first 25-30 minutes. I mean, it's one thing about the quality element, but, you know, Norwich were on the back foot primarily, and, you know, a lot of the debate clearly does centre on the midfield, and as Dean Smith keeps telling us, feeling that they lack that physicality, that athleticism, that drive, And there wasn't a lot of evidence of that in the first 25, 30 minutes. So that would be a bigger cause for concern for me personally at this stage than, you know, this who's the creative spark or sparks in this side. But I will reiterate, you know, when you've got Dan Elsenani playing in the middle of the three across the middle of the park, and then you put Rashica in there as well, that's not where those players will be playing if both are still here beyond the transfer window. So it was a very much mix and match, patched up affair, really. And that, no surprise to me, was always going to hinder any kind of cohesiveness or sense that there was a fluidity to Norwich's work with the ball.
Yeah, I would agree. And to sum that up, at one stage in midfield, you had Liam Gibbs kind of sitting as the number six, and Todd Cantwell and Rashica as the eight. I think Sargent was on one side and Rowe on the other with Hugel up front. So it was, as you say, it was just filling holes, wasn't it? Getting players into certain positions to get minutes in legs. So, as we kind of said, I guess it's up to people to kind of draw what they want out of it. I don't think that we've been overly harsh. I think we probably summed it up quite nicely. But Sam, if we move on to kind of the other strand from the game, which is, as Paddy touched upon, you've touched upon as well, the various injuries. We'll come back to Isaac Hayden, but specifically on the others, I'll run through them quickly now. Pierre Lesmalou, that's a knock, not expected to be long term. Angus Gunn was a knee issue. Sam Byram, precautionary. Adam Eder obviously hasn't. Has he returned? Did he play on Saturday, Adam Eder? He's set to return for the under-23s on Friday, we believe. Kieran Dowell has had a hernia operation, should be back for the final pre-season game against Hibernian in Scotland, which, of course, is a week before the season. So probably not ideal from a Norwich City perspective, but probably will allow him to be involved, if not, probably not starting against Cardiff. So those are the main ones. Obviously, Isaac Hayden in that group as well, but we'll come back and speak about him a little bit later. But that group, Sam, underlines how big a squad Norwich had, because they could still effectively field two 11s with six players missing. But also some quite senior players in there that Dean Smith will be looking at and hoping will be able to make a difference. So, I mean, it all feeds into this idea of how muddled pre-season can be and how difficult it can be to analyse. But in terms of concern, did you get any kind of unduly concern from Dean Smith around any of those particularly?
No, I don't think from what he said, it sounded like it's anything to particularly worry about for fans in terms of the whole season and maybe the general culpability of the squad to be injured. I remember last summer, I think pre-season was littered with along with obviously COVID outbreaks and things, there was quite a lot of injury involved in that. And then Norwich had, injury-wise, probably their kindest season for a few years last season. So, you know, pre-season is always fluid. Players are coming off breaks and they haven't exercised in a little while for some of them. And they obviously haven't been in such an intense environment as they are in pre-season, which is, you know, notoriously even more difficult for players during training than during the regular season. So I think it's pretty normal during pre-season to see these sorts of things and these knocks and precautionary avoidance. Obviously, when we arrived at the walks, we had a little look at the pitch and said we wouldn't be surprised if Dean Smith was maybe taking players out based on the knowledge of that. I think those Kingsland maybe had an issue with their electricity or something and they couldn't water the pitch in the few days before. Smith already expressed concerns to us after the Dereham game about maybe fielding more of those more vulnerable players less maybe professional level pitches. So I think it's completely normal and understandable. Obviously, if it gets to the Hibernian game, which is a few days before the start of the Championship season, then Norwich fans are probably entitled to be worried about the players that aren't capable of being involved there. But for the most part, it looks okay. Obviously, we'll broaden out the discussion and talk about them a little bit more later on. But I would say the signings of Hayden and Sara in terms of their involvement from the start of the season are probably, that's not going to happen pretty much. So that's probably more to worry about. Kieran Dowell is the only one that it looks like might be touch and go, because he's obviously had a hernia operation that will keep him out until what we were told is that trip to Scotland. So beside him, I don't think there's anyone to be particularly worried about. Adam Eder, obviously, they're introducing him very slowly, but that's because he spent so much time away from the team, and with a long-term injury, you obviously want to bring them back quite slowly, and it's totally understandable they want to bring him back at their own training ground in a game that probably will have a bit less attention on it than these Ling games. So no, I don't think it's anything particularly to worry about. What it does do is highlight maybe the problems that they'll face if there is a similar injury crisis to the ones they've faced in the Championship previously. And it shows the gaps that might need to be filled. It tests Dean Smith's ability to adapt to those sorts of things. I would suggest that, as Paddy referenced, a midfield with Milo Rashica and Todd Cantwell as number eight probably suggests that they haven't quite got the answers to all those problems just yet. But there's plenty of time to iron those issues out. Obviously, we're expecting Gabriel Sarr to sign, and that will bolster the midfield a bit as well. And Dean Smith will learn more about his players. He also spoke in the post-match about signing more players, plural. So it could be that they add to those areas. So no, I don't think it's too much to read into now. It's just a test, and maybe it helps highlight to Stuart Webber and Dean Smith where they maybe need to improve on.
Absolutely. To flip that, Paddy, really good to see Andrew Omobamadeli back last night. And I will I'll play a little bit of a chat that I had with him. It was very good, actually. He had a very good kind of 3-4 minutes with him where he spoke about how difficult the last 8 months have been for him, essentially. It's been a back issue. Of course, it came at a time where he's just been making progress. It was really good to see him back last night, and also probably showed how highly rated he is by Dean Smith. But also, that 45 minutes under his belt on a pitch that wasn't particularly great, the fact he got through that should probably hopefully give him a lot of confidence heading into what's to come and stepping it up now, I suppose, with Marseille on Saturday.
Yeah, and that word confidence in his body, I think, is the most important aspect. I don't think the talent, the temperament isn't in doubt. And that's only on a relatively small sample of games, but I wrote about it after the game. You know, at 19, he was a Championship title winner and a full international for the Republic of Ireland. So he'll take the Championship in his stride. It's just that confidence in his body, the movements, the dynamism, the athletic elements that he needs, particularly the physicality that he's going to face with a fair degree of Championship strikers. That only comes from now playing games. It's one thing to do the rehab and do all the work you want to do at Colney, but on pitches like King's Lynn's against rough, tough opponents, that's when, you know, he'll be able to convince himself that, yeah, I feel good, I feel fine, my body's holding up to the stress and the strain, and on we go from here and resume a career which, as we said to Dean Smith last night, you know, it can take him anywhere he wants to, really. The talent is not in doubt, and he looks to have all the elements you need to go on and have a tremendous career, and just about nurturing that now for your Dean Smith and his coaching staff. And I thought it was, you know, him and Hanley, that has the look of a Championship double act for me all day long. Not good news for Ben Gibson, but fundamentally it was those two who saw home the second of the two Farker title wins, if you recall. You know, that's how he got his opportunity, injuries to Gibson and Zimmerman. And for me, If there's no issues injury-wise between now and Cardiff, it's those two all day long. Omobamadeli on the right-hand side and Hanley switching to the left. But the experience of that guy, he could quite comfortably play on the left-hand side of a two. So, yeah, as much as we have spent a large portion of this discussion already, maybe concerns about the creativity and the advanced elements in the team defensively, particularly the heart of the defence, Is there going to be a better centre-back duo than those two in the Championship? Not for me. So, you know, you look at the strengths of what Dean Smith's got to play with, and it's those two right away, because that, okay, I've seen one or two people questioning, which Gibson does have, that ability to step into midfield, break the lines with his passing. But I think if we see Omobamadeli with a long run in the side, I think he has the ability to add that to his game, that passing range. And I think Hanley is a bit underrated as well. Maybe not as good as Gibson on the ball, but he can do that job as well. So, you know, for me, they are the real deal, those two. And yeah, we just hope now, given the theme of King's Lynn and pre-season in terms of injuries elsewhere in the squad, that man, Andrew Omobamadeli, gets to Cardiff fit, healthy and ready to crack on.
Yeah, and he's a bit of the chat, very candid on his spell away from the team, and I got the sense he's very much a man on the mission ahead of the Championship campaign. So here is he's a little bit of Andrew Omobamadeli speaking after the friendly win over King's Lynn Town.
Just to sort of look at that period, I mean, you spoke about maybe the frustration, but is it a benefit? I mean, you kind of touched upon it, but a benefit that it's arrived at this stage of your career in terms of experiences for you as a young football player?
Yeah, no problem. It's a mixed bunch, obviously, because for me, I felt like it wasn't a great time because obviously the Tottenham game, and I felt in those times I was maybe going to get a run of games. But look, everything happens for a reason, do you get me? So there is negatives to it, obviously, because I got injured, but you can take away some positives. Like you said, it's happened now, I've experienced, because that's my first ever time missing over a week of football. And in during that time not playing football, I've learned a lot, even off the pitch as well, like mental health and stuff like that. So obviously we have great staff, all the boys are great lads, so they help me so much through that. And I just have massive respect for the lads that are out for a year, like ACL injuries, all of that. Because you never really realise that until you're actually injured. So massive respect to all those boys and how they cope with it.
Those dark days, what are they like? How do you get through them when you have that unmotivated day, or when you have the day where you're feeling a little bit down because of the injury and you're watching other people train and play? It must be incredibly hard. But how do you come through the other side?
It's just always kind of having that in the back of your head. Like, it was good for me at the point where obviously I've seen some specialists and they're like, okay, this is your plan. So I had an end goal of it, and obviously today was the end goal. So through that 7-8 months, that was just my focus. Like, I need to be back for King's Lynn or the Marseille game. I need to be back for those games. So the days I was feeling motivated, it was kind of the days I was like, okay, these are the days I actually need to put in the work so I could be back for this. So that's what kind of kept me through, just wanted to get back playing quick.
And of course, the injury came at a time when the manager changed as well for you. So that must have been another sort of frustration, I suppose, but equally kind of looking ahead to this season, does that give you something to prove? Do you feel like you still have to prove yourself to Dean, or do you feel like you have got that assurance ahead of the season?
Oh no, by all means I need to prove myself. I played half a season and then I played a couple of games in the Premier League, so by no means I'm assured anything really. I know that myself, and I know I need to prove the new manager. I know I need to obviously repay Norwich City for the contract while I'm injured. So, yeah, I've a lot to prove this season, but I'm ready. And I'm ready for the challenge and all rearing ahead for it.
Two more. I mean, you kind of mentioned the healthy competition in those defensive areas, but how good is it to learn off players like Grant Hanley and Ben Gibson? One's an international one. Yeah. I think was in the England squad, but didn't quite get a cap. They're very experienced players for you to kind of lean on and learn from.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Both great lads, along with Christoph Zimmermann. Just every day, you know, you pick up stuff from them. They've been in the game way longer than me, they've more experience than me, so obviously it's a competition for the starting place, but equally I'm just kind of acting like a sponge and just soaking up every kind of little thing they do. Or sometimes I watch them in some maybe situations and then I'm like, okay, that's how the veterans do it, so I need to kind of do that. But it's great, and as I said, the all three of them great lads off the pitch as well, so it's good competition, but equally they're great lads and I learn off them as well.
8 months away, you must be absolutely buzzing for the start of the season.
Oh yeah, definitely. I just hope obviously my progression keeps going the way it is now. But yeah, I'm delighted and I'm just buzzing. Hopefully I can stay on schedule.
Love the stuff. We live Norwich City.
The build-up.
The passion.
The drama.
The last minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pink and Plus. The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pink and Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
Okay then, gents, if we pick it up back on the injury themes, I guess the major one to kind of touch on is Isaac Hayden. The big news surrounding him is as Dean Smith revealed after the game, he's had surgery on that knee. He's only completed 1 week of training since becoming a Norwich City player, of course, signed in June on a loan to buy deal from Newcastle United. Sam, it's gutting, isn't it? First and foremost, if we put this from his perspective, he's not kicked a ball since December. Injury has kept him out. He's just signed for a new club. From what we can gather, it sounds and from everything we're hearing, sounds like he's absolutely distraught that this has happened and this is the case. He's not going to be out for hopefully too long. I think we're probably looking at about a month. I mean, Dean Smith said August. We would probably be surprised to see him before the end of August, if not later than that. It's a really devastating situation for him, isn't it? Just as he maybe sought to make a fresh start and kick on at a new club.
Yeah, and he really sounded committed and excited when he spoke to obviously club media upon signing. So I'm a bit gutted for him, given that he's not had, you know, obviously Norwich fans have had this frustration for a few weeks since he signed. He's had this frustration since December when he first sustained that serious knee injury. So to be getting those setbacks, it must be terrible for him, especially when he obviously felt like, or presumably felt like he was sort of over the hump when he arrived at Norwich, ready to play a big role. I'm sure he was told when he signed and was well aware that he'd be one of the first names on the team sheet. And after whatever it was, 6 months maybe of being on the physio's table at Newcastle, that must have been so refreshing. So to then have it stolen away as quickly as he has now, you can totally understand why he's so disappointed. But it at least shows commitment to the club, and it shows how willing he is and excited he is to contribute to the cause that he's so upset by this. You might maybe see some lone players come in and they might not be as upset about the impact this will have on the club, because it's not necessarily going to be their club long term. But the way that he spoke, he also spoke to outlets in Newcastle, I think, about establishing Norwich as a Premier League club. So he's clearly not just hoping that this is a season and then he goes back to Newcastle. He's hoping that he becomes a Premier League player with Norwich City in the long term. So he's obviously very committed. He's obviously very excited to play in yellow and green, and to get this setback must be heartbreaking for him. I'm sure it's nearly as heartbreaking for Norwich fans, who have been looking for that true defensive physical midfielder since Oliver Skipp left last year, obviously. And yeah, I think the solution now is a big task for Smith. He's probably got a good number of weeks in the Championship, and we know how quickly fixtures come in that league, that he's going to have to manage without the man that was supposed to solve that problem. I think that's probably where a lot of the discussion is going to be now. I saw a lot of praise for Liam Gibbs last night after his performance in midfield at Lynn, and it might be that he's battling out with somebody like Jakob Sorensen. Maybe they're tempted to go into the transfer market, but there's a lot of options for them there. It's hard to see that any of them are going to be as effective as Isaac Hayden, who's been a Premier League regular for 5 seasons. So it's not great for him and his career, not great at all for the club. It's just a really disappointing situation, really, especially after Norwich fans saw the signings really fail to take off last season. I think they were hoping to get some players in that were really ready to go in England from the start of the season. And I think Dean Smith's thinking behind maybe looking slightly closer to home in terms of the potential signings, that was probably in his thinking, that he wanted players that were ready to go. And it's unfortunate that obviously Isaac Hayden's been dealt another blow in his comeback, but from the character that we've seen so far while in his time at Norwich, I'm sure he's somebody that will deal with it well and just will be working hard on trying to get back as quickly as possible, because Norwich really do need him.
Absolutely. And as you said, it's going to be an intriguing battle now, isn't it, for the start of the season. You've got Jakob Sørensen, who I thought was okay last night, Liam Gibbs, who continues to impress, I think, and technically certainly is very good. Whether he has the physicality to kind of stand up to the rigors of the Championship maybe is something that Dean Smith will want to assess over the weeks to come. But Paddy, I'm sure something that you've heard a lot, and Sam probably as well, is Norwich fans saying, how come Norwich always sign injured players? Why are these players allowed to get beyond medicals, and how do they pass medicals? And I think from my perspective, I'm clearly not a doctor, because if I was, I wouldn't be hosting this show. But I think that there's a misconception about medicals, that if you're injured, you fail them, and if you're fit, you pass them. That's not really what they are. They're a bit more almost like risk assessment for clubs. They look at kind of long-term issues and then take a view over whether that investment weighed against the risk is worth moving forward with. So that's worth bearing in mind, that you can be injured and still pass a medical, and you can have had a long-term injury and still pass a medical. But equally, that's usually on the club's kind of decision, really, because one club might decide not to sign a player based on a long-term issue. Say there was a player who had a really long-term issue with their ankle. Norwich City might take them. Another club might decide that that risk weighed against the money that they're going to pay is too much, and therefore they would fail the medical, so to speak. So it's all the word medical, I think, throws people a lot of the time. So that's worth clearing up. But this kind of question, why do Norwich keep signing injured players, is one that is kind of being debated a lot at the moment. What's kind of your reading on it? Because I guess it's probably at the forefront of people's minds because of the situation with Matheus Norman last year, who obviously signed with a little bit of an injury. That's true of Isaac Hayden as well. And it also, as we're going to move on in the last segment of the show in just a moment to speak about Gabriel Sara, it's also true for him as well. So it does feel like it's a little bit of a theme, but actually it's probably not worth reading into too much. Would you maybe agree with that?
And also the position those players all play, midfield as well. It feels like, what the hell are they doing? It's almost a slot on the recruitment as well as the medical staff. But the way you've mapped it out is absolutely spot on. It isn't they're injured, therefore they fail the medical. It's that risk and also the finances, because certain financial commitments around deals far outweigh others. And for me, I can well imagine a scenario where you had, towards the end of last season, in a room at Colney, door locked, bolted, Stuart Webber in there, Dean Smith in there, probably Craig Shakespeare, probably some of Stuart's recruitment team, and they're going, look, Isaac Hayden, we can do that deal. We think we've got a good chance of getting Gabriel Zara. Hayden, we think, because we've obviously done our gen, his fit, he hasn't played, but obviously that there was an issue there in terms of Newcastle, and when they had to declare again in January their 25-man Premier League squad. At that stage, you wouldn't have been fit because you only got the injury a month or so before that. So maybe the sense was that it wasn't that he wasn't fit to play for Newcastle. He just wasn't at the time they declared their squad. So he comes in, he's fit, he's raring to go. Zara, yes, we know he's got this injury, but the prognosis is he misses maybe a month of the season. Right, OK, we'll do these two deals because we're only dealing with one of those two who's not going to be available. But of course, events, dear boy, events, you know, who can foresee that a week into a full contact pre-season from Isaac Hayden and his knee swells up, you know? There's a lot of hindsight goes on, I feel, with this, and maybe beating Norwich around the head. You know, ultimately, talking about Matheus Norman there, it popped into my head. Ozan Kabak had injuries. Billy Gilmore had injuries. But both of those, you know, didn't arrive injured. But maybe the perception is that Norwich's recruitment is seemingly... the common theme is injury, and I don't think that is the case. So obviously it probably needs somebody to go and forensically look at multiple windows and multiple signings under Stuart Webber, and then looking at the cross-referencing the injury record. I'd be very surprised if what the feeling and the perception is right now is actually the reality, if you were to empirically look over the entirety of Stuart Webber's transfer business. Because if it was, you'd have to ask serious questions of what on earth Stuart Webber and his recruitment team are doing, continually sourcing injured or players prone to injury. So ultimately, as I say, you know, Isaac Hayden, when he arrived, is fully fit and available to start pre-season. But, you know, a week into it, he's not. And now, you know, the positive element, two positive elements, Dean Smith saying that the consultant, when he did what was a minor procedure to clean out the knee, flush the knee out, was very happy with how it went and doesn't envisage any complications. And also the fact that, in contrast to Matheus Norman had to go and eventually, having played through that pelvic problem, had to go and get surgery midway, just over halfway through a season. Isaac Hayden is doing this in the summer. Okay, there's the lack of pre-season element. You can't do too much about that. But in terms of how many games he's going to miss, if all goes to well, and there's no more unforeseen setbacks on his rehab, then the vast majority of the Championship season, Isaac Hayden is still available. So there is a fundamental difference if you want to compare those two. And as I say, without having done it and number crunched, I'm pretty sure that statistically it isn't that Norwich signed Crocs, and as a result, their medical team should be dispatched and made to find alternative employment, or the recruitment people for that matter. I think it is just... sadly, feels like the common theme is that is the situation. But, you know, I wrote about it the other day. You're probably not able to go and do the Zara deal if he's been playing since April and continuing his trajectory, because his value then would have been at a level, and the interest from other clubs, both maybe UK-based and further afield would have been at a level Norwich just couldn't have competed. So there's maybe actually upsides to players who just slip off the radar, fall down the pecking order in terms of watch lists because they're not playing. And it may, you know, ultimately, everything that Norwich or any club for that matter does in transfer windows and signing players, there's an element of gamble to it. And it's, as you said earlier, Connor, it's calculating the gamble and calculating the risk. And if Zara, hypothetically, is available, firstly, the deal gets done. There's no issues with his medical, but is available from September onwards and proves to be the player they clearly hope he is. We look back in May, they're in the Premier League. Gabriel Zara's played a major part in that. Is anybody flagging up Norwich's chronic record of sourcing injured midfielders? I don't think so. So a lot of this debate is with the benefit of hindsight. Stuart Webber isn't afforded the benefit of hindsight. And I don't think you really can put at his door a player who's fit to start pre-season and then a week later suddenly breaks down. I think that's just, sadly, bad luck.
Yeah, and a player can say, you can spend 10 million quid on a player and they turn up and in the first training session they break their leg. It's that old cliched thing, isn't it? Nothing's guaranteed. I mean, I've actually got in front of me here a list of Isaac Hayden's injuries since 2014, and none of them beyond this one. This is the longest injury that he has had. It's kept him out for the most amount of time, but he's not missed prior to 21-22 more than 10 games with injury throughout his career. There's not a track record of knee issues throughout that. He's had some ankle surgery, he's had a back injury, a hip injury, a thigh strain, and then he's obviously had the knee issue, and that's kind of it throughout his career. So with the extensive research that they've done on him, you don't get any kind of red flags, I suppose, around his injury record. So there's nothing in that to suggest that this is a long-term issue or this is something that has been repeated throughout his career, in which case then you would look at maybe the due diligence and the research that they've done, and that can't really be leveled them as well. Sometimes things are just bad luck in football, and that's just the way it works, and that feels like the case with Isaac Hayden. This feels like a good time to break off and hear a bit from Dean Smith, and then we'll come back and I suspect we'll be talking about a Brazilian midfielder.
We heard him over there talking a bit longer than you wanted to talk, but Andrew Mbamba Daly on the pitch, great to see him out, 45 minutes.
Yeah, really good, and as I said, we wanted to nurse him back because it was a stress injury. We don't want to throw him onto hard grounds too quickly, and we thought tonight was a good chance to give him 45 minutes, and he's come through that unscathed. And I expect really big things of him to come. He's a talented player, he's athletic, he's good in the air. All the attributes that can be a real top centre-half for us.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I mean, you know, you play in that position yourself. You've worked with a lot of decent centre-halves, I'm sure, in your coaching career. He's got the raw material, hasn't he? He just needs to keep his head down, keep working. It's there.
Yeah, no, his experiences will come with playing football games. He's been unfortunate with the injury last season that's, robbed him of a lot of games. But he's come through it a stronger person mentally, I think, as well. And his outlook now is to become one of the leaders of the group.
Ask you about another younger player. Obviously, you've let Flynn go out and one or two others. But Liam Gibbs, he looks maybe one who's a bit closer to your first team thoughts, fair to say?
Yeah, Gibbo's done well. We'll obviously... Three players went out from that area, two Loneys, Billy and Matthias, and Ruppy went as well. So we've been looking to bring people in that area, and but also give the opportunity to players here as well, and Liam's one of them. And I thought he'd done well today. I thought he looked forward really quickly, which was what we've been looking for. And he didn't take too many touches in our own half, which has probably been one of our faults in this in the first few games in pre-season.
Final one, Marseille, safe to say that'll be a step up in terms of the quality. So what do you need to see from your boys in that game?
Well, we need them to step up now as well, and I'm sure we will. As I said, the togetherness within the group and the understanding of what we're after has been really good. The training sessions have been good, and I expect them to step up now for the Marseille game.
Dean Smith there, speaking in the wake of Norwich City's 2-0 win over Kings Lynn Town. Some very interesting lines in there. I'm sure you'll agree. You can watch the full version of that chat, as you can with Andrew Mbamba Daly as well, on our YouTube channel. Well worth subscribing to that for all the interviews and content, not just throughout pre-season, but also the season as well. Sam, Gabriel Zara, we've mentioned him throughout this video. Video podcast, I've got my mediums confused there. Throughout this podcast, it looks like come the weekend, barring any issues with his medical, he will be unveiled as Norwich City's latest summer signing, their second of the window, another midfielder. It was clearly a priority area that Norwich looked at. We'll come back to kind of the injury aspect again. It feels like we've spent the majority of this podcast talking about injuries, but first Brazilian to play for Norwich City. I think when you think of Brazilian footballers, you think of Ronaldinho, the original Ronaldo, you think of Flair. There's kind of a sexiness to Brazilian footballers, very technical, very good to watch. There's an excitement and an aura around Brazil as a footballing nation. You know that when they play, they might lose 7-1 to Germany, but it's probably going to be entertaining. Gabriel Sara and what he brings with him feels quite exciting to maybe people who haven't really got an extensive knowledge of his footballing ability.
Yeah, and he's quite aligned to that from what we're led to believe. If he really is the answer to their creativity problems, then it's a bit of a cliche almost that he's coming from Brazil. I believe the first Brazilian player to play for Norwich. It's a surprise given the old yellow and green theme. So, yeah, I'm sure there's going to be lots for the Norwich City media team to get stuck into with that in terms of marketing and things like that. But yeah, I think it's very exciting for Norwich fans. Obviously, the injury aspect, I'm sure people don't want to hear us ramble on about those things anymore. That slightly dampens it. But at surface level, it's very exciting. You know, big money in the context of Norwich City, especially in the context of a Norwich City side in the Championship. So yeah, a lot of excitement about it. And it's a hole Norwich have needed to fill since Emi Buendia left, really. So you're seeing them in this window with their first two signings potentially fill the two gaps that they left and should have filled last season, arguably. And for the sort of numbers involved, this is a player that they clearly feel can add to them in the Premier League if they do end up back there. So yeah, lots to be excited about. I'm quite looking forward to seeing him. I think the sort of YouTube supercut videos haven't maybe been as a trick filled as you might expect from a Brazilian, but I think that's probably not much to read into longer term. And I'm looking forward to seeing him play. He seems an interesting footballer, almost in the sort of Marco Stupemann build. And I think they'll probably hope that he's maybe a slightly higher caliber of player technically, but he seems to be a sort of gentle giant in the way that he moves the ball and plays, because he does have quite a large frame, and I'm sure they'll be pleased with that to add to that sort of athleticism, physicality issue that they've become really concerned about for quite a long period of time now. So I think that factors into it as well. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him probably more than I have a lot of signings over the last couple of years. And I think if this is the answer to that creativity problem, it's a signing that they've needed for a good long while. But I think fans that are sceptical also have reasons. It's hard to think of a time that Stuart Webber has really invested a good amount of money in a player at Norwich City, and it's gone particularly well. Most of his signings so far have been sort of picking up players that other clubs might not have looked at and scouring more obscure leagues to find them. I suppose it does fit that sort of alternative scouting model in that not too many English clubs are looking to the Brazilian market. What we normally see is them moving from there to a European club and Norwich then, or not Norwich, but generally English clubs picking them up from those European clubs once they've proved themselves there. So I think there is that ingenuity and that innovation that's been present in typical Stuart Webber signings, and that's exciting. But there is a degree of scepticism in me given the previous track record in recent years of bigger money signings. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how it pans out, especially if he does turn out to be that sort of mould of player, that Emi Buendia type that's going to take the creativity and the chance creation by the scruff of the neck and try and do something about that.
Yes, let's debunk a myth first and foremost. And I promise this will be the last time on this podcast that we speak about injuries. But again, this perception that maybe he's a little bit of a crock, to use that word again, the Brazilian seasons are absolutely relentless for anyone that follows them. They're playing more often than they're not. It's a huge amount of games in a very confined period. He's actually had two injuries in his career, 23 years of age. One was a metatarsal fracture that put him out for 123 days, so longer than he's been out of his current injury, but he missed fewer games. So he only missed 12 games in that period. This ankle injury that has been bothering him since April, he's been out for 76 days, but he's missed 21 games. So that's it. That's his injury record from when he broke through from Sao Paulo. And kind of an interesting player, Pad, in that he's kind of played as an attacking midfielder. He's played as a number eight. He's played on the left. It feels at Norwich that he's going to be on the right as well, as well as that. It feels like he's going to fill that kind of number eight position. It was quite an interesting insight that you picked up from Stuart Hodge's podcast. He spoke to Juan Arango, who's a Brazilian commentator, who spoke a little bit about him. An interesting footballer, it sounds like, and one that does seem to tick a lot of boxes in terms of what Norwich City are looking for at this moment in time.
Yeah, I think he's a Dean Smith templated midfielder. I can't escape the comparison with a certain Johnny Howson. I think that's the type of player he is, that you can play, as that Juan Arango pointed out, you can play the six role, you can play the eight, you can play the ten, but he's not a stopgap. He isn't a jack of all trades. He is a number eight, in that guy's opinion, who's watched him regularly. But that tells me straight away that he can do everything that you would associate with a modern-day midfielder. He's good athletically, against the ball, by all accounts, that is the case. But on the ball, both in terms of his technical ability, his goal-scoring output as well. Not hugely prolific, 17 goals, I think it is, in 119 games. But, of course, I certainly have no real insight into how he's played primarily within the San Paolo setup. So I have seen one or two, to take Sam's point, one or two goals where he's arriving late in the box, thumping headers all day long. You'd take that, especially in the English Championship. So for me, I don't see it. And Arango himself said, he's not an Emi Buendia type. I think he's very much in the Johnny Howson mould. And if he's has an impact as Johnny Howson did, then he's going to be good in the Championship, no doubt about it. At 23... he's only getting started as well. So his peak years are ahead of him now. There's no doubt if we've still got to have the asterisks until the medical's through and we're out the other side and it's all confirmed. If it gets done, then, and he has the impact, clearly Norwich feel primarily, he can have reported 11 million figures, chicken feed. He's going to be worth substantially more than that if he really, really has the impact they feel he's going to have. So I think it's an astute move. And as I say, less, as you rightly say, Connor, less an injury concern for me. It's just how he adapts and how quickly he adapts to not just a new football style, a new country, new language probably as well. He is a young man. You don't know his family setup. All of the off-the-field elements have to come together as much as can he adapt to what he needs to adapt to be an influence in an Norwich team going from a promotion in the Championship. But it certainly doesn't feel like Norwich were going through the motions when they put this deal together. This is peak Weber in terms of flying under the radar, trying to steal an advantage on other rivals. And if it comes off, you can bracket in with Buendia, Pukki, those level of pieces of business under Stuart Weber.
Yeah, and it's worth saying as well that Norwich have stepped up kind of their footfall in South America generally, but certainly Brazil, since obviously the change in Brexit regulations, which now makes that a more viable market for English clubs. It was kind of closed off kind of prior to that. And as Sam summed up really well, actually, a lot of the time it would be that they'd have to move to Spain, as Emi Buendia did, or move to other European countries before then stepping into the Premier League. And there are countless examples. Luis Suarez, Edison Cavani. We could list loads of South American players who've had to take that route to enter the UK. Now with the change in Brexit regulations, which I could sit and bore you with, but I won't. But essentially, it means that all of the countries at the top level are kind of treated all of the same and placed into the same points-based system, whereas before that wasn't the case, to give you a very, very streamlined version. But that's probably a whole nother podcast in itself. So that means that Norwich have dipped into the market. They've got they employ scouts in that region now. We've obviously seen the football partnership with Curitiba as well, who are a Brazilian top flight side. So all of this points towards Norwich City being willing to look in that market a lot more. So to bounce it back to you, Paddy, because I know these are the questions that people are going to want asked, when can we, when/if, if obviously everything gets done, when can we expect Gabriel Sara to be unveiled as an Norwich City player? And the second part of that question will be around kind of the value of the transfer, because there's been a lot of conflicting reports to this. I think when we initially were able to stand it up, it was pitched to us as a loan to buy. Ever since then, the Brazilian media seem to think it's transformed into a permanent, which I guess makes sense in terms of Sao Paulo's financial situation as well. So what's kind of your reading of that? So a bit of a two-part question for us just to end the show on.
Yeah, well, where are we now? We've just gone midday on Wednesday, UK. We understand him and his representative are imminently heading towards the UK. That was communicated to me by the Norwich end last night at King's Lynn. So, and they're coming here primarily to complete the medical, because all the financial elements, both personal terms, 5-year contract, 4 years with an option. That seems to be the way the wind is blowing in terms of the contractual element. And obviously the club-to-club figures. And yeah, it would appear clearly it is a permanent, current fluctuations in the currency rates. But I think you're talking potentially a club record deal. Of course, there'll be attendance.
Sorry to jump in, Pad, but there will be people going, how can Norwich afford? I'm sure you're coming on to it, but how can Norwich afford that in the current climate, given what we heard from Stuart Webber earlier in the summer?
Well, I mean, I'm not party to Norwich's financial accounting, so I can't give you a definitive accountant's answer. But to me, very clearly, if we take Stuart Webber at his word and what he said, it tells me one of the top bracketed players will be departing, because there's no way otherwise they could afford that. And of course, you know, it isn't, let's say 11 million is the figure, or 9 million maybe up front. It's not 9 million suddenly goes out of a Norwich bank account and lands in the Sao Paulo. You know, that was the to in and fro in over the weekend, if you're led to believe the reports from the Brazilian end, that it was the structure of the deal and how much up front. You know, it might hypothetically be 50% of that, might be even less, that needs to go immediately. It's not that Norwich needs to find suddenly £9 million right here, right now. That's not how deals get put together. You know, even in the current window, Norwich will be both deals they've done previously in terms of sales and incoming deals. There will be payments going out in this window relating to previous deals. But it does, in the round, tell me that, you know, they're pretty confident they can move on an Aarons, a Rashica, maybe a Zolis for actual dough in this window. And if that is the case, again, how astute is it to go and do your business first before you then sell? Because if you do it the other way around, you can be pretty sure Sao Paulo will be savvy enough to, you've just got 10 million for Christos Zolis, hypothetically. You want X for Zara. Well, now we know you're flush. Maybe add another number on. So that's my reading of it. As the window unfolds, things may become clearer, but clearly it isn't. Norwich now immediately need to find 9 million, because if that was the case, given what Stuart Webber said, that they don't have those funds. They didn't have any funds in January. We know that. So where have they suddenly found those funds? You don't get that tranche of parachute payment immediately. So it tells me that in the fluid movements of incomings and outgoings, it's all part of that bigger master plan. I'm just trying to think, before you interrupted me rudely, Connor, did I come and answer the other question? I think I was getting on to that. If they got the medical done and there's no issues, obviously there has to be a synced release in terms of the two clubs, but Friday, Saturday, I think would be the favourite, because let's be honest, it won't be a revelation when Gabriel Zara is holding up a green and yellow shirt at Colney. So there's no point really on them sitting on it. They go to Marseille at the weekend. I'm sure they'd want a bit of clear water either side of the game. So, sooner rather than later, subject to a completed medical, we will be seeing Gabriel Zara in yellow and green.
And these things, as you said, are often paid over years, aren't they? So I think anyone worrying about the financials behind it, I'm sure Norwich City, under Stuart Webber, as he has done for the last few years, has an idea and a plan on exactly how to pay and to cover it as well. So I wouldn't sort of concern yourself with that. So it's from Sao Paulo from Norwich City to Marseille. That's their next destination on Saturday for their next pre-season friendly. We'll bring you coverage of that game on all our usual channels, Pinkin.com and the Pinkin Plus app as well. Hopefully there'll be a method of which we can watch it. I'm sure there will be. It sounds like that is the plan at this stage. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that the technology stands up on that front. And then, of course, we'll reconvene at the Abbey next Tuesday for Norwich City's pre-season friendly against Cambridge United on that occasion. And we'll probably then sit down to record a podcast after both those games have played this time next week. So that gives us a nice week for various other things to happen. And who knows, maybe we'll be talking about more Brazilian footballers, which would be lovely, wouldn't it? Or maybe something else, who knows? Hopefully not more injuries. But that rounds off this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, as I said, all coverage, Pinkin.com and the Pinkin Plus app. You can take out a free trial now to gain access to all of that exclusive content, not just articles, but podcasts and videos as well. Great time with the season, the new season coming up. It is the best time, I think, to subscribe and try it out. Gents, thank you for joining me. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again very soon.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.